Right, no inviting your Furby mates round for a party, you, while I'm away. So, let's have a look. iPad, check. Pen, check. Notepad, check. And, wait a minute, bunch of bananas? How did they get in here? Yes, thank you, Stanley. I know it's my five a day. Sometimes I really think you're my mother, you know. Right, let's fire up the trusty Yaris and set the sat-nav for Stevenage. Welcome to I'm a Public Health Professional, Get Me Out of Here, and this week saw the second Hertfordshire Public Health Conference, which attracted over 200 delegates here to Stevenage for a bit of networking and to see presentations on a wide range of public health issues. But before we get into all that, you know, I could really do with a drink.
I'm here with Jez Cox from Hertfordshire Year of Cycling. We've got one wheel, but we've also got a smoothie maker and a board full of fruit. I mean, what's it all about?
This is a special contraption that we use to promote cycling across the county. It's promoting healthy eating and being active, and I like to use it to explain to people that about a small fruit smoothie made of a bit of fruit juice contains about 60 calories. About 4 minutes of pedalling away to make it optimally smooth will burn off about 60 calories. So it's a calorie-free vitamin hit of goodness, and it makes you feel better about yourself, which is what cycling always does.
Excellent. So if you can give it a go.
We'll whiz away. So we just sit on, start pedalling, and there we go. Gradually, what will happen is the little bits of banana and grapes will give up, and they'll become, as I say, optimally smooth. We've been using this all over the county this year, the Tour of Britain, the Women's Tour, and lots of cycling events that we've been partnering with, to promote a blend of, no pun intended, of cycling activity, healthy eating and healthy diet.
It's been a big year, isn't it? A big, you know, well, since London 2012, perhaps.
We're at a real pinnacle for cycling at all levels in the country at the moment, but commuter level, utility level, participation, sport, all the way through. There's more cyclists on the road and on the trails and BMX tracks and all over. And we're very lucky in Hertfordshire to have brilliant facilities for them. We're lucky that people come out of London to come and ride in Hertfordshire because we've got so many good places to ride.
Will we be seeing these on the Christmas market? Or?
Quite possibly. They're in hot demand, actually, but not all in Hertfordshire colours, in the purple and green. That's looking quite good.
That's looking very good.
What do you think?
I think that looks excellent. That would be good.
Let's grab a cup. Optimally smooth that looks to me.
Thank you.
There we go. Grape and banana.
There we are. Cheers.
Yes, that smoothie set me up nicely for a chat with prominent clinical psychologist Gay Sutherland about smoking.
The Health Act 2006 came out. Everybody perhaps thought that smoking wasn't an issue anymore, but, you know, obviously still a problem.
It's still a huge problem. I mean, it absolutely has not been done yet. Although we've got smoking rates down a bit, there are still, you know, millions of people in this country smoking, and sadly, more than one in two of them, if they don't stop, will actually lose their lives to tobacco.
Is it down to that hardcore of people that can't get the message, don't get the message, or is it more complicated than that?
I think it's partly down to a hardcore, and that we've got some people who are very nicotine dependent out there who can't seem to stop smoking. But of course, we've still got youngsters starting. So however good we are at helping people stop, we also have to make sure fewer young ones start smoking.
Now, a particular interest of yours is smoking and mental health. Has in some way that issue now been highlighted a little more, because
smoking and mental health is really, really important. Nobody has been considering supporting people who've got anxiety and depression and things to stop. They have very, very high smoking rates, and people with severe mental health problems who smoke die about 16 to 25 years younger than people who don't smoke, who don't have mental health problems, and that is just a staggeringly awful statistic. So there have been several recent sort of government initiatives, for instance, NICE guidance, and the Royal College of Psychiatrists and physicians have brought out guidance really pointing out there is a moral imperative to try and support people with mental health problems to stop, because against all product expectations, actually it appears that mental health improves on quitting smoking rather than gets worse.
Has the public perception been? I mean, you watch a 1940s black and white film and someone says, have a cigarette to calm your nerves.
Absolutely. I had a period of my life when I smoked, and I completely believe smoking relieved my stress. It doesn't. And the reason smokers perceive that it does is that between cigarettes, your nicotine levels in your bloodstream drop down. As they drop down, you start to go into withdrawal, and that makes you feel a bit tense and tight and so on. You have another cigarette, you feel better, less stressed. Hundreds of thousands of times of doing that in your life convinces you smoking relieves my stress, but actually, long-term, taking nicotine actually makes stress worse. And if you can quit for a few weeks, your stress levels will definitely reduce.
Fascinating stuff. Did you know for every day you delay giving up smoking over the age of 35, you lose 6 hours life expectancy? Definitely makes you think. Now, who's this little green fella?
Yeah, this is Peter the Pea. Peter comes to sessions with us to educate the children around healthy eating, so he's a big hit with the group.
And just looking behind, I mean, you've got tremendous display. And the one thing that really sets out is you've got a couple of drinks there that people might have thought were healthy, but looking at the amount of sugar there.
Yeah, absolutely. So some of the drinks that we've got here are marketed as healthy and families would drink on a regular basis, but actually not sure about the hidden sugars that come within them. So what we do is just tell families that these are the kind of sugar content in these drinks and give them healthier alternatives. Obviously we'd like them to drink water, but that's not very realistic. So educating them around what's in the drinks and giving them healthier alternatives.
Does it come as a bit of a surprise when they see that?
Absolutely. Most families are really, really shocked by the amount of sugar in these drinks. Yeah.
And Busy Bodies as an organisation, I mean, tell us a little bit about what you do.
So Busy Bodies is a family weight management programme, so we help families live out healthier lifestyles, so give them nutrition advice, we get them to do a bit of physical activity each week, so we get local coaches from Hertfordshire to come and deliver the session, so that if the families enjoy it, they can go and join in activities within their community. But it's more about behaviour change and helping families make realistic health choices, because things like this demonstrate how difficult it is to live out a healthy lifestyle nowadays. So we help families and support them over a 17-week programme.
Thanks, Helen, and of course, Peter the Bee.
Last time I saw that many sugar lumps, I was standing in front of Red Rum. And for the record, I was the one who gave him an apple. Now, when it comes to obesity and behaviour change, there's no one better to talk to than our friend Dr. Angel Chater.
Angel, you've just given a fascinating presentation on behaviour change and obesity. I think one of the things that came out of it for me was actually what you said at the end, that, you know, there's no easy answer. If there was, we wouldn't be asking the question.
Yeah, absolutely. There is no one answer. You know, if we had the answer, then it wouldn't be a problem. But what we do have is a lot of evidence. So we know now things that we need to look at, things that we need to consider. So it's just about packaging it all together and seeing what works best for who.
How difficult, you know, you're mentioning there, how difficult it is for someone who's got the good side and the bad side. Good side saying, I know that these lifestyle activities are not doing me any good. The bad side saying, well, actually, I enjoy them. I mean, how do you reconcile those two things?
That has to come from the individual. So, you know, you will ask someone, you know, what are the reasons why they want to change? What are the reasons why they find it difficult to change? And then getting them to weigh up the pros and the cons. We call it decisional balance. And then they find their own solutions. So whatever their reasons for change are, we need to increase those and kind of try and decrease the reasons for for sustaining that behaviour.
You talked a little bit about motivational interviewing. I mean, tell us a little bit about that as a technique.
It's a communication style, so it's a way of looking at communicating with people to help them resolve that ambivalence, to help them to feel more motivated inside themselves. And it's just a way of talking to people using, you know, open-ended questions, reflecting back what the people have said. So you're not telling people anything, you're not giving them advice, you're not finding their solutions, they're doing all the hard work. And the problem is people, both health professionals and clients, get worried because they think it's going to take a lot longer to do or it's difficult to learn. But actually, once you know the basics of it, it can make a consultation work so much better than you just telling someone what to do and then them probably not listening to you.
Seems communication is key. I mean, do we need to start that communication as early as possible?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I think, I mean, I would be teaching this stuff to kids if I could, you know, getting into schools and getting children to understand how to reflect themselves and ask themselves open questions rather than just being told what to do. And I think we go through childhood being told what to do, and then as adults we're expected to make informed decisions ourselves when we're not taught how to do that. And the same with health professionals. They have all this information that they just want to impart on people to help them, when actually the person needs to make the decisions for themselves.
Is it difficult working in the environment amongst clinicians who, you know, they've got their job to do, but they jump perhaps to a clinical conclusion, whereas obviously, you know, the kind of things you're talking about may even be alien to the way they've been taught?
Yes. Sometimes at the beginning, they have a very different approach to the end of the sort of training that we do. But at the end of the training, they're very inspired and empowered by these sorts of skills because they can see things in a different light. And I think a lot of it is just about knowledge and training and just building up those skills. I think the skills themselves, people take on board quite well. I'm training pharmacists and dietitians in motivational interviewing and they're loving it. So I think it's more a case that it's not routinely on their curriculum. So if we can get it on their curriculum, then all the better.
I guess finally the whole thing is getting the evidence base for the people who've got their hands on the purse strings.
Exactly that. Yeah, we need to get people commissioning involved, both in terms of training people and in terms of developing effective interventions, which are, you know, evidence based using kind of behaviour change techniques we talked about earlier, and you know we need funding to do that, so we need to be speaking to the right people.
My thanks to Angel, Jez, Gay, and Helen for taking the time out to talk to us on what's been a really busy day. Everyone seems to have gone home. Here, wait a minute. Jez had left his bike in the corner. If only. Oh, of course, I knew that bunch of bananas would come in handy. Smoothie, anyone?
Bicycle, bicycle, bicycle.
I want to ride my
bicycle, bicycle, bicycle.
I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it.
I'm a Public Health Professional, Get Me Out of Here is written, presented and produced by Pete Hill. All comments made are purely personal and do not relate to any other body. This podcast is protected by a Creative Commons licence. Any unauthorised reproduction for commercial gain is strictly prohibited.